Chapter 30. The house, who never talked much. He sat there mostly silent and looming up three sizes bigger than any of them. The ruler of the aviary, I muttered viciously. It annoys you, that I should talk of that time, she asked in a tender voice. L, I won't, except for once to say, that you must not make a mistake. In that aviary he was the man. I know because he used to talk to me afterwards sometimes. Strange. For 6 years he seemed to carry all the world and me with it in his hand. Dot dot, he dominates you yet, I shouted. She shook her head innocently as a child would do. No, no. You brought him into the conversation yourself. You think of him much more than I do. Her voice drooped sadly to a hopeless note. Hardly ever do. He is not the sort of person to merely flit through one's mind, and so I have no time. Look, I had 11 letters this morning, and there were also 5 telegrams before midday, which have tangled up everything. I am quite frightened. And she explained to me that one of them, the long one on the top of the pile, on the table over there, seemed to contain ugly inferences directed at herself in a menacing way. She begged me to read it, and see what I could make of it. I knew enough of the general situation, to see at a glance, that she had misunderstood it thoroughly and even amazingly. I proved it to her very quickly. But her mistake was so ingenious in its wrong-headedness, and arose so obviously from the distraction of an acute mind, that I couldn't help looking at her admiringly. Rita, I said, you are a marvelous idiot. Am I? Imbecile, she retorted with an enchanting smile of relief. But perhaps it only seems so to you in contrast with the lady, so perfect in her way. What is her way? Her way, I should say, lies somewhere between her 60th and 70th year, and I have walked tete-a-tete with her for some little distance this afternoon. Heavens, she whispered, thunderstruck. And meantime I had the son here. He arrived about 5 minutes after Rose left with that note for you, she went on in a tone of awe. As a matter of fact, Rose saw him across the street, but she thought as he had better go on to you. I am furious with myself for not having guessed that much, I said bitterly. Suppose you got him out of the house about 5 minutes after you heard I was coming here. Rose ought to have turned back when she saw him on his way to cheer your solitude. That girl is stupid after all, though as he has got a certain amount of low cunning which no doubt is very useful at times. I forbid you to talk like this about Rose. I won't have it. Rose is not to be abused before me. I only mean to say that she failed in this instance to read your mind, that's all. This is, without exception, the most unintelligent thing you have said ever since I have known you. You may understand a lot about running contraband, and about the minds of a certain class of people, but as to Rose's mind, let me tell you that in comparison with hers, yours is absolutely infantile, my adventurous friend. It would be contemptible, if it weren't so, what shall I call it? Babyish. You ought to be slapped, and put to bed. There was an extraordinary earnestness in her tone, and when she ceased I listened yet to the seductive inflections of her voice, that no matter in what mood she spoke seemed only fit for tenderness and love. And I thought suddenly of Azalidai being ordered to take himself off from her presence forever, in that voice the very anger, of which seemed to twine itself gently round one's heart. No wonder the poor wretch could not forget the scene, and couldn't restrain his tears on the plain of Rambouillet. My moods of resentment against Rita, hot as they were, had no more duration than a blaze of straw. So I only said, much you know about the management of children. The corners of her lips stirred quaintly. Her animosity, especially when provoked by a personal attack upon herself, was always tinged by a sort of wistful humor of the most disarming kind. Come, amigo George, let us leave poor Rose alone. You had better tell me what you heard from the lips of the charming old lady. Perfection, isn't she? I have never seen her in my life, though she says as he has seen me several times. But as he has written to me on 3 separate occasions, and every time I answered her, as if I were writing to a queen. Amigo George, how does one write to a queen? How should a goatherd, that could have been mistress of a king, how should she write to an old queen from very far away, from over the sea? I will ask you as I have asked the old queen. Why do you tell me all this, Dona Rita? To discover what's in your mind, she said, a little impatiently. If you don't know that yet, I exclaimed under my breath. No, not in your mind. Can anyone ever tell what is in a man's mind? But I see you won't tell. What's the good? You have written to her before, I understand. Do you think of continuing the correspondence? Who knows? She said in a profound tone. He is the only woman that ever wrote to me. I returned her 3 letters to her with my last answer, explaining humbly that I preferred her to burn them herself. And I thought that would be the end of it. But an occasion may still arise. Oh, if an occasion arises, I said, trying to control my rage, you may be able to begin your letter by the words Cheer Maimon. Apostrophe, the cigarette box, which as he had taken up without removing her eyes from me, flew out of her hand and opening in mid-air scattered cigarettes for quite a surprising distance all over the room. I got up at once, and wandered off picking them up industriously. Dona Rita's voice behind me said indifferently. Don't trouble, I will ring for Rose. No need, I growled, without turning my head, I can find my hat in the hall by myself, after I've finished picking up. Dot, bear. I returned with the box, and placed it on the divan near her. She sat cross-legged, leaning back on her arms, in the blue shimmer of her embroidered robe, and with the tawny halo of her unruly hair about her face which she raised to mine with an air of resignation. George, my friend, she said, we have no manners. You would never have made a career at court, Dona Rita, I observed. You are too impulsive. This is not bad manners, that's sheer insolence. This has happened to you before. If it happens again, as I can't be expected to wrestle with a savage and desperate smuggler single-handed, I will go upstairs and lock myself in my room till you leave the house. Why did you say this to me? Oh, just for nothing, out of a full heart. If your heart is full of things like that, then my dear friend, you had better take it out and give it to the crows. No, you said that for the pleasure of appearing terrible. And you see you are not terrible at all, you are rather amusing. Go on, continue to be amusing. Tell me something of what you heard from the lips of that aristocratic old lady who thinks that all men are equal, and entitled to the pursuit of happiness. I hardly remember now. I heard something about the unworthiness of certain white geese out of stuffy drawing rooms. It sounds mad, but the lady knows exactly what she wants. I also heard your praises sung. I sat there like a fool not knowing what to say. Why? You might have joined in the singing. I didn't feel in the humor, because, don't you see, I had been incidentally given to understand that I was an insignificant and superfluous person who had better get out of the way of serious people. Ah, par example. In a sense, you know, it was flattering. But for the moment it made me feel as if I had been offered a pot of mustard to sniff. She nodded with an amused air of understanding and I could see that she was interested. Nothing more? She asked, with a flash of radiant eagerness in all her person and bending slightly forward towards me. Oh, it's hardly worth mentioning. It was a sort of threat wrapped up, I believe, in genuine anxiety, as to what might happen to my youthful insignificance. If I hadn't been rather on the alert just then I wouldn't even have perceived the meaning. But really an allusion to hot southern blood I could have only one meaning. Of course I laughed at it, but only pour l'honneur, and to show I understood perfectly. In reality it left me completely indifferent. Dona Rita looked very serious for a minute. Indifferent to the whole conversation? I looked at her angrily. To the whole. You see I got up rather out of sorts this morning. Unrefreshed, you know. As if tired of life. The liquid blue in her eyes remained directed at me without any expression except that of its usual mysterious immobility, but all her face took on a sad and thoughtful cast. Then, as if she had made up her mind under the pressure of necessity. "Listen, amigo," she said, "I have suffered domination, and it didn't crush me, because I have been strong enough to live with it. I have known caprice, you may call it folly if you like, and it left me unharmed, because I was great enough not to be captured by anything that wasn't really worthy of me. My dear, it went down like a house of cards before my breath. There is something in me that will not be dazzled by any sort of prestige in this world, worthy or unworthy. I am telling you this, because you are younger than myself. If you want me to say that there is nothing petty or mean about you, Dona Rita, then I do say it." She nodded at me with an air of accepting the rendered justice, and went on with the utmost simplicity. "And what is it that is coming to me now with all the airs of virtue? All the lawful conventions are coming to me, all the glamours of respectability. And nobody can say that I have made as much as the slightest little sign to them. Not so much as lifting my little finger. I suppose you know that? I don't know. I do not doubt your sincerity in anything you say. I am ready to believe. You are not one of those who have to work. Have to work, what do you mean? It's a phrase I have heard. What I meant was that it isn't necessary for you to make any signs." She seemed to meditate over this for a while. "Don't be so sure of that," she said, with a flash of mischief, which made her voice sound more melancholy than before. "I'm not so sure myself," she continued with a curious, vanishing intonation of despair. "Don't know the truth about myself, because I never had an opportunity to compare myself to anything in the world. I have been offered mock adulation, treated with mock reserve, or with mock devotion. I have been fawned upon with an appalling earnestness of purpose, I can tell you, but these later honors, my dear, came to me in the shape of a very loyal and very scrupulous gentleman. For he is all that. And as a matter of fact, I was touched. I know. Even to tears," I said provokingly. But she wasn't provoked, she only shook her head in negation, which was absurd, and pursued the trend of her spoken thoughts. "That was yesterday," she said. "And yesterday he was extremely correct, and very full of extreme self-esteem, which expressed itself in the exaggerated delicacy with which he talked. But I know him in all his moods. I have known him even playful. I didn't listen to him. I was thinking of something else. Of things that were neither correct nor playful, and that had to be looked at steadily with all the best that was in me. And that was why, in the end, I cried yesterday. I saw it yesterday, and I had the weakness of being moved by those tears for a time. If you want to make me cry again, I warn you, you won't succeed. No, I know. He has been here today, and the dry season has set in. Yes, he has been here. I assure you it was perfectly unexpected. Yesterday he was railing at the world at large, at me who certainly have not made it, at himself and even at his mother. All this rather in parrot language, in the words of tradition and morality as understood by the members of that exclusive club to which he belongs. And yet when I thought that all this, those poor hackneyed words, expressed a sincere passion I could have found in my heart, to be sorry for him. But he ended by telling me that one couldn't believe a single word I said, or something like that. You were here then, you heard it yourself. And it cut you to the quick, I said. He made you depart from your dignity to the point of weeping on any shoulder that happened to be there. And considering that it was some more parrot talk after all men have been saying that sort of thing to women from the beginning of the world, this sensibility seems to me childish. What perspicacity, she observed, with an indulgent, mocking smile, then changed her tone. Therefore he wasn't expected today when he turned up, whereas you, who were expected, remained subject to the charms of conversation in that studio. It never occurred to you. Did it? No. What had become of your perspicacity? I tell you, I was weary of life, I said in a passion. S. He had another faint smile of a fugitive and unrelated kind, as if S. He had been thinking of far-off things, then roused herself to grave animation. He came in full of smiling playfulness. How well I know that mood! Such self-command has its beauty, but it's no great help for a man with such fateful eyes. I could see he was moved in his correct, restrained way, and in his own way too, he tried to move. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.